Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
Get into real estate for sure. I know that that's probably preaching to the choir here, but we are always of the mantra, if you're always buying, then you're going to hit the ups and downs, but overall it's going to average out.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Best Ever listeners, welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Slocum Reed, and today we are joined by AJ Shepherd. AJ was one of my first interviews. That interview aired in January of 2022. It's episode 2699, Three Ways to Generate More Income Through Property Management with AJ Shepherd. He's joining us from Portland, Oregon. He's the owner of Uptown Syndication and Uptown Properties. They own or operate a multifamily portfolio there in Portland and also offer third-party property management. They have 250 units in Portland that they own out of the total management portfolio of 900. AJ, can you get us caught up on the last 2.5 years and tell us what you're currently focused on?
Sure, Slocum. Thanks for having me on again. Really appreciate it. Last couple of years have been a little busy. We did take a little pause in buying units in the last year just because of interest rates. It's been tough figuring out for sellers the cap rate coming up. Sellers still wanting the old cap rate that was a year ago. So we finished off a couple syndications, 506B raises beginning of 2023, and then we're starting to get back to it now. So that's pretty exciting. Other than that, we keep trucking along, keep growing at a good clip, but not too fast where we're having to hire a bunch of people at the same time. But our staff now, we're probably at 20 to 25 people, about half of which are offsite professionals. So we utilize VAs out of the Philippines, which is very helpful in the repetitive tasks that you find in property management.
Which is almost all of them.
Well, a lot. For sure.
To be honest, a lot of stuff can be done remotely and a lot of it is repetitive. Or repetitive, I don't think is as good of a word to use as scriptable.
Yeah, we've started to see some more evictions come up as inflation has come down the pike. So we're in the process of figuring out some of those issues, especially here in a blue state with a landlord not so friendly state. But we're still working our way through it and we're in the business every day. So we're, I would say, better off than a lot of probably single family per single landlords. We're doing this multiple times a week.
AJ and I spent a lot of time together at the Best Ever Conference just about a month ago. So we've done a lot of catching up on one another's businesses. But for the sake of the listeners, let me share that back in January of 2022, when this episode aired, AJ was trying to talk me into providing third-party management because I was doing well enough with my own portfolio. That has since happened. My own personal portfolio is about a third of what I manage. The other two thirds are third party. And I have been texting, calling AJ, dragging him to the bar and buying him drinks to get him to tell me his secrets as I go on this journey that he's been on since 2007, I believe. So we're both owner operating multifamily investors. About a third of what we manage is ours and the other two thirds is third party. So I want to speak here and answer some of the questions I'm asking as well, AJ, especially because I'm based in Cincinnati, Ohio, very different market in a lot of ways from Portland.
It's like a different color, isn't it?
Yeah, very landlord-friendly laws. What the Cincinnati Metro is going through right now is very different on a macro level than what is happening in Portland. So I wanted to ask, you said inflation is causing evictions. What all have you seen happen to the Portland market in the last couple of years?
Portland's been in the national news the last 4 years. So we have seen actually a decrease in population in the Portland proper, but the Portland MSA still has a 2 to 3% increase in population, which is down from 6 or 7%. And what we see is, I would say we used to have about 0.5% of our portfolio a month not pay, and now we're up to 1%. So it's not a significant amount, but when you look at the numbers, that's like twice as many people for us. So it's not huge, but again, it's more than what we've seen. And that's just a little uptick. The issue that we have in the blue state, Oregon, is that the process takes a lot longer. So when we're adding 1%, it takes somewhere between 90 to 180 days to really move someone along. And that the issue that we run into probably a little bit more than you guys do.
How long the process takes, I'm sure, is a bigger issue for you all. I would say from posted notice, we call it a 3-day, but a posted pay or quit eviction notice to an actual set out with the bailiff is between 60 and 90 days, depending on how backed up the court is and depending on how soon we can get a hearing date, erring more towards 60 than 90. So AJ, I feel you when it comes to delinquency going up for sure. And the number of evictions we've had to file in the last 12 months is significantly greater than before, not only because the management portfolio has grown, but also proportional to the number of units under management. It's taking a lot more conversations with tenants after their rent is delinquent and they're being charged late fees to get those rents collected.
Yeah, it's usually a downward spiral for that type of tenant. As soon as they miss a rent payment, then there's more fees that get added. And then it's like a larger mountain to climb. We might see someone be late a couple times, and then 6 months down the road, they're really struggling even more.
And it's not necessarily just rent, especially in the C neighborhoods that we manage. It's not just rent that has our tenant base falling behind. It's consumer debt more than anything. And frankly, especially with the prospective tenant applications that I'm reviewing now, there are a lot of people who tell us over the phone that their credit score is above 600 and it comes in between 600 and 550. That's happening a lot more often. Collections balances, credit card collections balances. I've seen more charge-offs in the last 3 months than I had seen in the last 3 years. So there's a lot of that going on for sure. Demographically speaking, you said that the Portland MSA is growing, but the city is shrinking. What's happened to rent rates in the last couple of years?
I would say early 2023, we came up on the end of a huge rise. It was 7 to 15% over 2020 to 2023. I think I looked at the numbers for last month, and year over year, we were pretty much at 0%. During the winter months, Portland's pretty cyclical. So we see a lot of rental increases over the summer months. This is probably one of the tips I gave last time is we write all of our leases to end in May, June, July, when people are moving, especially if they have kids. They want to move during the summer months. So we essentially plan for them to either move out or get a rental during the time when the market's high. So if you look at rental increases year over year from November and December and January, you're going to see a lot lower numbers year over year this last year, whereas we've ticked back up. So rents were about flat for the last year is kind of what I'm saying. Does that make sense?
It does.
We saw a more significant dip in the winter months this year than we have seen in the past. And we've seen a higher increase from the winter months coming into spring than we have seen. So it's about evened out, but we definitely had to write some leases that were under what we had done the previous winter.
Gotcha. Cincinnati has not evened out. We are recording this in early May, and we are still in most places for most multifamily inventory. We're still seeing lower inquiry volumes, and not necessarily as if it were the holidays, but as if it were still cold outside. So let me ask, AJ, transitioning the conversation a bit, you and I were talking before the interview started. With regards to multifamily acquisitions in the Portland MSA right now, what kinds of opportunities are you seeing? Or what is it that makes a possible acquisition compelling in Portland right now?
Both my brother and I believe that we are at the bottom of the market right now. So what's happened with interest rates is trying to be able to finance these deals is you've got a large payment essentially to underwrite. So as interest rates possibly come down, then if you were to refinance, that payment would go up. So we're seeing right now pricing has stayed the same or maybe even come down for the purchase of units, which is incredible. In our Class C neighborhoods, we were seeing pricing at somewhere between 170 and 220K a door. And now pricing's somewhere between 100 and 160K a door. So we're seeing the opportunity come up. They're few and far between, though. It's very difficult to get a seller to come down to that when they knew a year ago that the pricing was up so much higher. So it's really solidifying our relationships with the current brokers. We've actually picked up some deals off the residential MLS, like some random family friend or whatever is like, oh, I can totally list that. And they just don't have any experience in commercial. We've got settings on our searches set up. So if anything comes on, we usually get an offer in within a couple hours of getting that deal. So we've been successful on a couple of those, which is pretty incredible.
What size are those properties?
20 to 50 units. There isn't a lot of guys looking on the residential MLS, and they're also not as quick as probably we are with it. So we find that we're able to perform there quite well. And like the institutional investors are not looking for anything under 60 as well. They want an on-site manager because we own and operate in Portland, and we operate a management company that manages single family homes, duplexes, fourplexes. We're able to really operate those type of properties at a lower cost than most managers.
Yeah, that's the same boat that I find myself in. As soon as you get to the point, it's more like 100 units in Cincinnati because our rents are so much lower than yours. But as soon as you get to the point of having on-site staff, on-site maintenance and leasing staff, the buyer pool is so much more sophisticated and they're willing to outbid me basically every time. And so I've been sticking with smaller stuff basically ever. The largest property I own at this point is 26 units, in part for that reason. AJ, it sounds like what you are recognizing in Seattle is that you're in a moment in the market cycle where prices are lowering because of supply and demand factors. With regards to the purchase and sale of multifamily, but your projection is we will leave this moment in the market cycle relatively soon, and those values will not only return to where they were a couple of years ago, but surpass that as the cycle continues. Is that your expectation?
Yeah. As interest rates come down, cap rates are going to come down, and rents, we still believe, are going to continue to go up. So as rents go up and cap rates come down, your NOI increases on future potential deals and underwriting, which is going to drive values up.
That makes a lot of sense. AJ, you and I are not the only investors, not even the only apartment owner operators who have felt like good deals have been scarce for the last couple of years. And even though we found ourselves writing offers, it's been just as much seller expectations being too high as it has been getting outbid by other buyers. Part of my transition into third-party management was the realization that I was looking for growth for a couple of reasons, but I was looking for business growth and not finding the deals that I wanted to make that growth happen, especially when you get into late 22 and through 2023 as interest rates were just continuing to climb and sellers' expectations were still on 2021 valuations. You already had this when we last spoke in early 22, but one of the reasons I was looking to scale third-party management is because I was looking to scale the size of my apartment operations to the point that I could bring on more talented staff for more specialized job descriptions. And I'm starting to really see the fruits of that now that we're just under 300 units under property management, that my capacity to build out a team with a lot of VAs, to your point, my capacity to build out a team is far greater than it would be if all I was managing was my own stuff. It's not just about the profit of the third-party management activity as much as it is that tripling the units I'm managing allows me to bring more human resources and other resources in-house, have greater control, and deliver a better service of operating the entire portfolio, my stuff and third party included. AJ, I know from our previous conversations that you think property managers should be buying more real estate because it would give people whose business model is focused on income the opportunity to use that same model to generate real wealth in a way that you just don't as a third party manager. What are your recommendations for owner operators who are considering getting into third party management for the sake of business growth, for income, for scale, for lack of deals that they can buy that they're seeing in the market? What advice do you have for those investors who are considering third party management?
I think you got it right there. The human resources that are added to your team and really there to benefit the company is one of the great benefits. It's like a flywheel, right? It's hard to get it turning, but once you get it turning, you're talking to other real estate owners that are in the area. If you want to go do syndications, then you've already got this book of people that are already in real estate in your market and know what's going on. And you already know that they have cash. So that seems like a pretty good way to capitalize on all this hard work of starting a property management company that goes into it. My brother and I want to choose our own schedule to have that freedom, and having the ability to manage other people's properties essentially almost pays for the management of our properties for free. We still own properties just ourselves. It's not like within syndications or having partners on them. So rather than us do it, teaching and bringing these other people up, improving their lives, aka employees, is a huge benefit. One of the fun things that we've done recently is that we partner with our employees. So we partner with them on flips. We partner with them on investment properties. So we have certain portfolios where we are teaching them how to do what it is that we do to build wealth for their futures. The other opportunity that we provide to our employees, we give them once a year a $5,000 loan as a match on any syndication that they want to invest in. So if they invest with us $5,000, we give them a 0% loan for $5,000. Instead of providing other employee perks, we want to really promote the investing into real estate and investing in the future. Then on top of that, if they see that property come up, they're going to be more apt to do their job better for that because they're like, I own a piece of that. I want to make sure it really goes well. So that's been fun and successful for us. But having more resources and more people in the market to talk to potential owners, potential sellers. We've actually bought some properties from our property management clients that just ended up being good deals. As a property manager, you're the first one to hear about what's going on. And being able to capitalize on that and provide great service is a big help in turning that flywheel and making it bigger.
We'll get back to the show. But first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is there is one. It's called Baselane, and it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselane for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselane.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselane.com/Joe. Are you raising capital for commercial real estate ventures? To make sure you comply with security laws and structure your deals correctly, talk to syndicationattorneys.com, your premier legal resource for real estate syndicators and fund managers. Syndicationattorneys.com dedicates its practice to helping real estate syndicators and fund managers legally raise capital from private investors. Their experienced team has helped create over $2.75 billion in security offerings, making them industry leaders in the capital raising space. To get a free copy of their book, How to Raise Capital for Real Estate Legally, go to syndicationattorneys.com or text the word FAIRLESS to 844-796-3428. That's FAIRLESS, F-A-I-R-L-E-S-S, to 844-796-3428. Launch and grow your business with syndicationattorneys.com today. This offer is not valid to Florida residents.
I actually had a multifamily owner reach out to me off market soliciting an offer because I manage what could be considered the only comps in the neighborhood. I own and manage them. So he reached out to me knowing I was the most likely buyer. I did my underwriting walkthrough. I reached out to him. We could not come to terms on a number because they were effectively asking for a valuation that they're going to need 6 to 12 months of overhauling their properties, getting their rents up, terminating some leases, getting some apartments renovated, getting that NOI up to justify the price that they were asking. So we didn't come to terms on a purchase agreement, but we did come to terms on a property management agreement that gives me first right of refusal to purchase after I, as a third-party manager, oversee the improvement of the properties to the point where they are producing a closer to market NOI and justifying the valuation that they were asking for earlier this year. So I get where you're coming from there. Building the scale of the portfolio and making those connections, broadening your reach as an operator in the space leads to a lot of other opportunities. There's one thing you said I have to come back to because I want my wife to hear you say this, AJ. Building out the portfolio gave you and your brother more freedom to play, I believe you told me at the conference, 100 rounds of golf a year. Now, I'm not interested in playing 100 rounds of golf necessarily, but can you explain how scaling the management portfolio has led to greater time freedom for you?
Yeah, we started a property management company, third party, in 2011. And before that, it was my brother and I doing all the management on our properties, managing contractors, sometimes doing some of the stuff ourselves. We really bootstrapped it. We started with single family homes and then worked our way up to duplexes, fourplexes, eightplexes, and now doing syndication. There's no substitute for learning it yourself. I will say that. Now the skills that we have and have developed is training people. So I typically do one-on-ones on Monday with 4 to 7 people. And the rest of the week, they're performing what they're doing. I might check up on them a little bit. But teaching them to do what it is that we've done before is a lot more leverage on my time and getting those qualified people. Sure, it's hard to find them, but now our property management company is large enough that I've got employees out finding more employees. I've got people out there finding more contractors. That is the leverage and the freedom that it doesn't take up my time, but it allows for me to teach those people on how to do it.
AJ, give me just a second here. This is a very property management interruption to a podcast interview. My ops manager just walked into my office to grab a fat stack of money orders out of my desk because now that rent is officially late because it's the 7th of the month, we're just going to go ahead and make one big deposit of everything and make sure all the ledger balances are accurate now that we're having the conversations with tenants about when they're going to be able to pay their delinquent rents. A very property manager interruption. AJ, I wish I had another hour to ask you questions. Hopefully you'll let me get you to the bar a couple more times at Best Ever next year. That's always a fun conversation. But last question here. I could pretend this is for the listeners, but it's really for me. I would highly recommend that a lot of our listeners who executed a very high level in a service that real estate investing requires, that they take time now while we're in this recessionary moment in the market cycle to consider and possibly act on providing what they already do for themselves at a very high level as a third-party service to other investors and better capitalize on what it is that they're already good at. That being said, and considering that I've been a third-party manager for not yet 2 years, I've been a multifamily owner operator for over 10 years, and I'm much better at making a property operate financially than I am necessarily an operating business. So with my expertise being in managing and operating multifamily and the financials of multifamily more so than a management company, what recommendations, AJ, do you have for me and for our listeners to better understand how to run an operating business like a property management company and how to better navigate financial models and financial forecasting, how to recognize which opportunities are good for us as property management company owners and which opportunities we should pass on?
Got it. So if I'm hearing the question right, you're wondering what sort of business development or new clients should I take on or not take on? And I can't tell you what you should do, but I can tell you what I do. We drew a line around our essentially neighborhood or where we want to operate. We typically go for higher rent districts because as a property manager, we charge a percentage. Typically, the higher rent districts also have less delinquency, so less headaches, less problems, less management issues. With that, that allows us to operate more efficiently. As far as the types of properties, we also look for garden-style homes with exterior doors. We typically use self-showing lockboxes, and those lockboxes allow us to go visit the property for move-in, makeup ready, get it ready, and then put a lockbox on it, and then potential tenants can go see it whenever they want. I think we had 10 showings on Christmas Day. I'm not going to send an employee out to go see that.
I will say, in defense of my Cincinnati and Midwest buddies, everyone I know who's tried doing that kind of system where there's a platform for giving prospective tenants remote access to apartments that they want to see, I have yet to see that successfully implemented at scale in Cincinnati or in any Midwestern markets. I'm not sure why that is. It's possibly because the vast majority of high-level operators have a lot of B and C class apartments in their portfolios. I'm talking about the people who have 1,000 to 2,000 units that they manage or that they own or operate that they've acquired through syndications. I've watched them try to figure out remote showings, and it doesn't work as well here as it does in a place like Portland.
Yeah. I think we talked about your stock too. It's probably some older stock. If you have interior corridors, that can potentially be a larger problem. And with the weather there, the property stock may be different than what we do. Most of ours, specifically saying we look for exterior doors, allows for those type of properties to fit into our model. We manage maybe one apartment complex that has interior corridors, and it's a much newer third-party management client that we do that for. So it's not as intensive.
Question here, AJ, on this topic, and then we'll transition the episode. As a property management company, what are your most important KPIs?
We always look at lead indicators, and really for us owning so much of the portfolio, it's really about vacancy. So looking at how many move-outs are coming up in the next 30 days, and how many leads are coming in for the current vacancies. We really look at getting those leased out. We are very confident in our screen process and getting good tenants in. So it's really about, are the rents set at the right market rate that allow for the number of leads to come in that a lease gets signed? And we shoot for 2 weeks, but we make sure it's by 4 weeks.
That makes sense with regards to the operation of the portfolio, but the operation of the management company itself. What's the most important thing for tracking the way that the management company is performing as your financial asset?
I want to say that we have set up our pricing structure that it works for every single property. So really keeping owners and ourselves happy with performance of the property is still the number one thing. It's pretty hard to look at the financials of the property management company when we are essentially not charging ourselves a lot of management fees on our own properties, because a I'd rather take those as self-employed gains or passive gains through the property than self-employment through the company. So we directly offset our management fees on those properties to take it as capital gains as opposed to self-directed income.
I do something very similar. That makes a lot of sense. Well, AJ, since you are a returning guest on the podcast, we're not going to do a full-on lightning round, but what is your best ever advice?
My best ever advice is get into real estate for sure. I know that that's probably preaching to the choir here, but we are always of the mantra, if you're always buying, then you're going to hit the ups and downs, but overall it's going to average out.
Awesome. That's great advice. AJ, thank you. Best ever listeners, thank you as well for tuning in. If you've gained value from this episode, please do subscribe to our show. Leave us with a 5-star review and share this episode with a friend you know we can add value to through our conversation today. Thank you and have a best ever day.
Slocum, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Hi, best ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access. And you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.